is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, I wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Coach Jay Smith from the University of Michigan, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And we are jumping on at 11:35 p.m. after game three of the NBA Finals.
What seemingly was a good game for the first half. The Nuggets just did what the Nuggets do in the third quarter. Primarily Jokic.
Here's my question for you. When this series is over, is game two going to be an aberration where we're going to look and just say, man, Denver controlled this entire series except for the fourth quarter of game two? That's kind of where I'm leaning.
I still think the Heat are going to win game four.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're going to do it. I think they're going to win game four and it's going to go six.
Tell me why. What do you see? What do you see?
I know this is a grand statement to say. If I take the third quarter out of the game tonight,
okay,
it's a game. Specifically, the last six minutes of the third quarter, right? Because the Heat were still there. They were down seven with 6 minutes left in the third quarter, and then it ended up being eight. It was 18, and then the Heat went on a 5-0 run to end the quarter. So it was 13 or 12 at the end of three?
They were up, let me see how quick I can add this up. 82-68.
So the Heat went on a 5-0 run at the end. So, but really that 6-minute stretch in the third quarter was what did it. And I just, I think I trust Spoelstra to have adjustments, and I know that he's very limited in his adjustments that he can make with his personnel. But you saw it in game two. I just think they're going to make these. I talked about at school today with one coworker. Obviously Spoelstra had adjustments, and that's what helped them. They made adjustments. They reacted to game one. They made adjustments. Let's see what Malone does. Well, I don't really know that. Mike, did you see anything out of Denver tonight that was they changed this game plan, or was it not glaringly obvious? I mean, Jokic wasn't a scorer first for most of this game. I mean, that's why he got 30-20-10 triple-double.
32-21-10.
Did I see that he's the first player to ever do that in that finals game? Would that be accurate?
No, I thought there was two other guys, Kareem and Wilt, that each did it once. Although maybe that was just a triple-double in the finals game. I don't remember the graphic, but I know Kareem and Wilt were on that graphic
I'll see if Stabby's hosted it or not. So, because I'm sure.
Well, the adjustment that Michael Malone made was playing Christian Brown, right?
Is it Brown or Bronze?
Brown. It's Brown, man. Come on. I love how the broadcast team was arguing about it.
Yeah.
He played tremendously. I mean, he made a big impact in this game. Look, I think the answer to your question is, what adjustments did they make? And I would say the answer to that is they really didn't make many adjustments, because I think that they're still of the same mindset that I'm of, which is, I just don't think that Miami has enough to be able to compete with Denver night in and night out. Now, again, they won game two, and they're tough and they're resilient, and they might surprise me and come back in game four. But I really don't see anything that indicates to me that Denver is not going to win this series.
No, Mike.
Because,
I know that
you're not predicting
Denver's
a Heat
winning
win.
This series.
I know you're not
predicting. I think the Heat are going to win another game, Mike.
No, I don't think they are. I think it's over. They're just like, what are the answers? What are the answers that they have? There's no answer for Jokic. I mean, they can't do anything with the guy. They can do nothing. And if Denver shoots the ball even reasonably well, and tonight they were terrible again from three. They only took 18 threes and shot 27%. Michael Porter Jr., 1 for 7. Now, he was a little bit better defensively. He had a couple of breakdowns. I know he got beat backdoor once that they showed the replay multiple times. But overall, I thought he was better defensively. And Denver's size tonight really took its toll. They out-rebounded Miami 58-33. So, I mean, they just killed them on the boards. And look, Miami didn't shoot the three particularly well, but they made 11 threes to Denver's 5. So typically you outscore a team by 18 from the three-point line, and that's a pretty good indicator that you're probably going to be right there or probably win the game. And as you said, in the second half, this game was never really in doubt once Denver took control of it in the fourth quarter. I just continue to not see any answers for what Jokic brings to the table. And Murray was better tonight than he was in game three. I'm sorry, than he was in game two.
They're the first players ever to have two teammates to ever have 30-point triple doubles in the same game.
Yeah, it was hilarious that you left Murray in with
the one
torn
rebound.
ACL potential. He's playing the last whatever. I guess I get it, but it still seems like you would take him out. And yet at the same time, it was interesting that Miami gets the Duncan Robinson three to cut it to 9 with what they were still like a minute 40 to go right after Spoelstra had pulled everybody out.
Yeah.
And Butler didn't go back in, but I think Bam went back in the game at that point. Yep. And half the Heat crowd was already gone, which, by the way, Miami's crowd – worst crowd in the NBA.
I mean, they left when Ray Allen, they missed Ray Allen's shot. You know, it's amazing. It's the old statement my dad and I talk about all the time. You know, like I was at the Indians game when they came back and won, and like they were down. I don't remember what the score was. They were down by 11 in the seventh inning or 9 in the seventh inning. I was at that game. Okay. And I swear I've heard like 20,000 people tell me that they were at that game, Mike, at the end of the game. Let me tell you, there was like 150 people left in the stands at that game because it had a rain delay. They were down by 11. So my dad's statement, I swear, there were probably 500 people left in the stands when Ray Allen hit that three, or 1,000 people left in the stands. But everyone was at the game, I'm sure, at some point said, oh, I stayed in the stands the whole time. I didn't leave that game. So
I don't even honestly care about them leaving, but even at the beginning of the game, like,
well, did you see them at halftime?
On their hands.
Did you see the stands when the second half started? I was like,
yeah, there was nobody there. There was nobody there. Well, and the design of their arena is crazy because you've got those two giant aisles on either side of like that middle section that's right at half court. And even when the stands are full, those aisles are so wide. It like takes up half the screen when you're watching. Yeah. I don't know. Miami's crowd, terrible. I mean, I didn't right from the very beginning, just not into it. And maybe it's just, I don't know.
Try out DJ Khaled.
I guess you got to get him out there earlier. But man, Miami's crowd, they need to.
Dwayne Wade was sitting there every time they panned over to him. He was on his phone.
Dwayne was not interested in the game. I can tell you that. He was not.
He's like, the Utah Jazz aren't here, so I'm not interested.
Exactly.
Do you see Jokic's post-game interview? Do you see Jokic's post-game interview?
I did.
What is it? Yeah, what does it mean to get 30-20-10? Not much.
Not much. True. I think everything that we know about this guy is that's kind of sort of the way that he approaches it, that those individual things don't mean a whole lot to him and he just wants to win. And look, you can say that's cliche or you can say whatever. And I'm sure deep down there's obviously some personal satisfaction. You don't get to the level that he's at without having some ego and wanting to be the best and taking some pride in what you do. But I think you can tell from the way the guy plays the game that he wants to win. He likes to get everybody involved and he is all about team.
I will say he's so uncoordinated at times. Does he not look uncoordinated at times when he's
Well, here's the thing. I guess what I would say is that it's not so much that he looks uncoordinated.
Is it because he's tall and awkward?
No, it's not. Like, I don't feel like he's about to fall down. I don't feel like he's stumbling all over himself. I don't feel like he doesn't catch the ball when it's thrown to him, which are all things that I guess I would consider to be somebody who's awkward. But what I see is a guy who is nowhere near the level of running and jumping athlete of the guys that he's playing against. Like, he's clearly not as smooth of an athlete as the guys he's playing against. And when you watch him and you watch him make his moves, right, everything is slow. Everything is kind of herky jerky. Everything is kind of off balance and weird angles and off the opposite foot. And he has to do all those things because he can't do it the way we normally think of an NBA player, especially an NBA player at that level, being able to do things with their athleticism. He has to do it with a different type of athleticism, with the eye-hand coordination. I know Van Gundy kept talking about just the fact that almost every one of his shots that hits the rim rolls around. And if it doesn't go in, it's right up there, just soft and flowing around the rim, and you expect it to drop in. And he just shoots from so many weird different angles, and he's going in slow motion. He'll take like that giant step and then go off the wrong foot and fade back and just create himself just enough space. It's almost like when you think about, let's say, like Patrick Mahomes, or you think about a pitcher who can kind of change the angle his delivery.
Joe Smith?
I feel like
sideline.
Yeah, I feel like that's how Jokic is as a shooter. When he's going to the basket, not so much on his threes where he's shooting the ball the same every time, but when he does his little drives
he's the same way every time. Mike, didn't you see those threes last series that he was chucking up there?
But I mean, his release point on his threes are the same, I guess is my point. Yeah, he's shooting off the 1 foot and fading back and all that kind of stuff, but his release point's the same. But when he drives off of 1 foot and he's going one direction or the other with the little runners or the floaters, like some of those he's shooting just like his jumper where it's up above his head, and then others he's kind of coming in sidearm or he's got it off to the side, or sometimes it almost looks like he's throwing it at the basket, and yet it always goes up there soft. So I get 100% what you're saying. I just don't know if I would describe it as awkward. I would describe it more as just like he has to make adjustments to make up for the lack of speed and leaping ability that we would normally expect in a guy who does what he does in an NBA game. You just don't see guys without the athleticism be able to dominate the way that he dominates. And as a result of that, it's just something that we've never seen anybody quite like this. I think you go back in time, and I don't know, could you compare, like, you think about Larry Bird and how Bird played, and Bird had sort of a similar release on his jump shot.
That wonderful Super 70 Sports tweet I sent you earlier today.
You sent me a Bird tweet? I didn't even see it.
Oh my gosh. Hold on, I'll pull it up. I'm pretty sure it's podcast appropriate. Hold on. I'm disappointed you did not see my tweet today.
All right, well, I'm going to look at it right now and see what I can find.
Oh, yeah, I could read it. I just won't say one part. In 1970, Larry Bird posted a quadruple-double when he scored 28 points, grabbed 14 rebounds, dished out 12 assists, and saved $10 by cutting his hair, his blank self.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah, that's a good one. My favorite My favorite one, my favorite Super 70s sport tweet related to Larry Bird is the one where he's going up against Spud Webb, and it says something like, Bird's on defense, and it says something like, Larry Bird knew he wasn't the greatest defensive player, but he was going to be damned if he was going to let a midget drive the lane on him. So that's my favorite Larry Bird Super 70s sports tweet. So anyway, look, I think Bird, same way, not a tremendous athlete. You could say Magic Johnson. I mean, not a tremendous athlete in the way that we think of like a Jordan or a LeBron or a Kobe. Like, both of those guys were not high flyers, but they were both guys who just had an innate understanding of what the game of basketball was all about in terms of when to pass, when to score, the things that were needed, being a great teammate. And Jokic has all of that, and he's in a body that's even bigger than both of those two guys, which, when you think about Magic Johnson as a 6'9" point guard, and you think about Larry Bird and what he did as a forward handling the ball and sort of ushering in that era of kind of the point forward, Jokic is kind of taking that evolution to the next level, where there's never been a point center. I mean, I guess you could say Wilt, to some degree, when he wanted to be, right, led the league in assists and just decided, hey, that's what I want to do this year, which again speaks to the kind of talent that Wilt Chamberlain had. But we've just never seen a guy at Jokic's size be able to do what he does as a passer, as a shooter, as a scorer. I mean, again, even tonight, like 12 for 21. I mean, I don't know. Has he shot below 50% in any playoff games this year? He probably has, but not many. I mean, he's got to be shooting in the high 50s, I'm guessing, from the field. And he's probably going to end up with averaging close to a triple-double in the finals. I think now he's probably like two assists shy of averaging a triple-double. And with the 21 rebounds tonight, I'd say that pretty much guarantees he's going to average double figure in rebounds. So there's a decent chance that this guy's going to average a triple-double in the NBA Finals, which I can pretty much guarantee. I don't think that's ever been done before. So Miami just doesn't have answers for him. There's nothing they can do. He gets to where he wants to go. And really, again, Denver has not shot the ball particularly well yet in any of these three games. I know Murray was good tonight, but even he was average in game two. And Michael Porter Jr., 1 for 7 tonight, 0 for 2 from 3. So he's what now, 4 for
he's really good.
20
he's
really or good. Something. I mean, he's done next to nothing. He only played 21 minutes tonight. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 0 for 3 tonight. And they're not shooting the ball well. And if they do shoot it well, I just don't think Miami has, and they don't have any answers, even if they're not shooting it well, as tonight kind of proved. And I don't know what the answers are for them if Denver starts shooting the ball a little bit better.
I don't know what. Listen, I don't know why I think Miami's going to win another game. I don't really have – I just have faith that they're going to come out and they're going to do something, and they're going to split this, and then it's going to go back, and Denver's going to win game 5, and then it's going to be over in 6. I'm sticking with that.
Well, that's probably as good of an analysis as we come up with, right? If you go back through the history of this playoffs, right, and you ask somebody, hey, why are they going to beat Milwaukee, or why are they going to beat the Celtics? And I'm not sure there's any answer other than the one that you just gave, which is I'm not sure how they're going to do it, but they're going to figure out a way to do it because they're tough and they're resilient. And now we can look at it and say they've done it before. I mean, I won't be stunned if Miami comes out and wins game 4, but I don't know that there's anything really tactically that they can do to slow Denver down. I think it's more going to be a matter of, do Denver's role players play well enough? And if they play even half decently, I think they're going to win. Because what's the floor on a Jokic performance? What's the worst you're going to get out of him? 25, 10, and 5?
I mean, what was game two, Mike? I mean,
41, 12, and 4. So you're talking about his floor is a 41.
What was game one point-wise? I mean,
triple double, and you have 27, I think. I think he had 27 or 28.
He's going to get 20, 14 and 10. 10 and 5 at least, right? I mean.
Right. And I don't think it matters what Miami – I don't think it matters what Miami does. I mean, I think Miami, again, they can throw zone possessions at them, which they continue to do tonight. Denver did make a little adjustment a couple times in the zone. They put Jokic down there in the short corner and got him off the foul line. And there was at least one or two possessions where they got him the ball down there along the baseline, and then he hit cutters going to the basket, which I thought was a good adjustment for Denver. I don't know that you could put him down there all the time. But moving him around against the zone, I think, makes some sense. Miami on offense. Butler, I thought, actually did some things tonight that he hadn't done in the first two games of the series in terms of going to the basket hard and then bumping guys with his shoulder and getting shots off. But even that being said, he was only 11 of 24 from the floor tonight. And I think if you'd have told me before looking at the box score, hey, how did Bam shoot tonight? I would have said, oh, I think he shot it pretty well, but he was 7 for 21. I mean, they shot 34%. Yeah, 34% from the floor as a team. And I didn't think they had quite as many open looks. And, of course, Denver didn't foul anybody on threes, which they did a couple times in the previous game. Miami just doesn't – they just don't have enough. I just don't see how they can conjure up enough offense unless they're going to hit a ridiculous amount of contested threes, which, again, they very well could, and they have all playoff long, which has been why they've gotten to where they are. But Gabe Vincent and Max Strus tonight combined to go 3 for 17. They have no chance. They have no chance if those guys are going to play – poorly. Miami's role players have to outplay Denver's role players for Miami to have any chance, because I just don't see a scenario where Butler and Adebayo are going to severely outplay Jokic and Murray. I just don't see where that's going to be a landslide in Miami's favor. I think it's going to be at worst even, and much more likely that the Denver duo is going to outplay Bam and Jimmy. And so now you're looking at what can those role players do? And like I said, Denver's role players weren't particularly good tonight, except for Christian Brown, who comes off the bench.
He has 15 points tonight, Mike. He's the first
15
rookie.
Points, sorry.
He had 15 points tonight. First rookie, Western Conference rookie, to score 15 points since this player in 1994.
First rookie in a finals game since 1994 to score
first
more than
Western
15.
Western Conference rookie.
Western Conference rookie. Man, you're really getting obscure.
Well, you got to know who was in the finals in 94.
I got to think. The 94 finals. That was the Houston Rockets. So Sam Cassell.
Oh, man. See, I knew you could do it, Mike. I knew you. I had faith in you.
All right.
I had faith in you.
All right. I just had to really, I had to really think it through.
It took you less time in the game would have taken you that I had set up for tonight that we're not.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad I was able to pull that. You know what the funniest cameo tonight was?
No. What was? I'll be honest with you, Mike. I had the first half on mute because my son and I are
Reggie Jackson.
Oh yeah, he did play. I saw him. He'd played 17 minutes.
Reggie Jackson.
I didn't even know he was on Denver.
Reggie Jackson. Get Reggie Jackson. 1 minute. Came in. I have no idea what that substitution was for or why. It made literally no sense based on anything that we've seen to this point in the playoffs. But Reggie Jackson got in for 1 minute. It still seems odd. It still seems like he could be a functional player, because he had his moments with the Clippers and with Oklahoma City. I know that he's maybe not as stout defensively as you might want him to be, but it still feels like he could be a guy that could – yeah, it still seems like he could be a guy that you could play for 6 minutes and he wouldn't kill you. But obviously, Mike Malone feels otherwise. Yeah. So.
All right. So we've made our predictions. You think it's over 5, and I say 6, so –
yeah, I think it's over. I think we're going to look back, like I said off the top, I think we're going to look back at game 2, the fourth quarter, and just say, man, that was such an outlier and an aberration in what this series has been. And that quarter is basically the only thing that stood in the way of Denver's sweep. And Denver wasn't great on the road all year, but in all honesty, what we've seen in these playoffs is that home court might matter less than it ever has for whatever reason. And Denver's now won, I think, three in a row on the road, if I'm not mistaken. No, four in a row on the road, yeah, because they won game six in Phoenix, and then they won the two games against the Lakers, and now they won this game against Miami. So they got a four-game winning streak on the road. I just think Jokic is going to show up, and I think Murray's going to show up. And if those two guys are at their best, Miami just doesn't have any
Let's
answers for
them. Let's not forget
that
the Cavs had a seven-game winning streak on the road in one of those finals, wasn't it? Because they won every game on the road. They swept to the finals. They had won six in a row, right?
Sounds right. I mean, in the Eastern Conference, yeah, I believe that.
Anyways, but regardless. All right, so this is just a question, Mike, that I'm going to ask you, and I don't want to go and elaborate anymore. Who's had a worse week? Zion Williamson or Ja Morant? At this moment, because we don't know what the Ja Morant situation is, but we're the foreboding comment from Adam Silver, and then all the stuff with Zion today. And I'm not going to go into any more of the Zion Williamson stuff, but who's had it worse? Are we just going to see the 2019 draft class in general?
Ja has had it worse. Now, he may not be feeling it quite as badly as Zion is in the exact moment, but Zion's issues are off the court and will not impact his ability to collect a paycheck. So I would say that Ja's ability to collect a paycheck is going to be impaired by his situation.
I'm sticking with my under 250 games, by the way, Mike.
Well, this isn't a flag in Zion's. This isn't a feather in his cap. Let's put it that way.
We'll leave it there.
It's bad. It's bad. The Ja thing is bad. I'll be curious to see what happens when whatever more information Silver was hinting at.
Said that's going to come once the series is over. He didn't want to do it.
Right. I know it's coming out, but I'm just saying I'll be curious to see what
we went to Cedar Point on Monday.
What a disaster for the league.
I went to Cedar Point on Monday and I had a student, not in my pod, a student from my school wear a Ja Morant jersey. And I was just like, come on now. Come on, man. So I don't know. All right. So I guess the last thing we're going to talk briefly about, the news that came out today that, the Suns were going to waive Chris Paul. Now, that was reported by Shams. And also, followed right after that, Crispy Haynes tweeted that Chris Paul still plans to play many more years in the league. Many. I don't know what that means. And that he would be looking for playoff or title contenders. Shocker there, right? Like, then Woj tweeted out about 8 tonight before the finals game that he's hearing that Chris Paul still would like to stay in Phoenix if they can work something out, but wants to know by the end of the month, which he's going to know by the end of the month because June 28th is the date that he's guaranteed contract situation happens or he's guaranteed more. So there's no definitive statement been made. The Suns haven't officially waived him, at least not that I could find anywhere. So I guess it's kind of lingering a little bit. It'd be interesting to see what happens with him. Like, obviously, there would be plenty of teams that could benefit from a little Chris Paul. I don't think a 40-minute Chris Paul or a 35-minute Chris Paul. I'll tell you what, Mike, I would be lying if I didn't cross my brain that it wouldn't hurt the Cavs to have him as a backup point guard. And not have to have him and rely on him to be play 35 minutes. It wouldn't be a.
You're dumping Rubio?
For Chris Paul? Yes.
All right. I'm just asking. I'm asking the question.
Yes, 100%. Now, do I think there's a snowball's chance in hell that Chris Paul is coming to the Cavaliers? The answer is zero. No. He's going to clearly go to the Lakers. He's going to go to the Lakers. Okay, right? He's going to go to the Lakers. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. David Stern can't do anything about it now. What?
Milwaukee?
Maybe. I mean, who's?
I'd like him in a Bucks uniform.
But you're not a big Chris Paul guy. Are you?
I mean, it depends on what you have to pay him, right? Stop.
You're not a big Chris Paul guy. You really want him around Giannis?
It depends on what you want to pay him. I'm not a huge Chris Paul guy, only because, I mean, part of it is that he just doesn't stay healthy. So when you really need him in the playoffs, he's probably not going to be there because he's going to be injured. So that's one of my biggest problems with him. I've never been a huge Chris Paul fan because I think he just kind of wears out his welcome. And he's a tremendous player, but I don't know. I'm just asking the question of everybody's kind of writing it off that, hey, he's going to go if he does get waived and this does happen, that he's going to go to L.A.
Oh, come on.
But
he's not going. He's going to L.A. There's no doubt in my mind he's going to L.A. I mean, there's no way he's not.
What's his number one priority?
Winning. He goes with LeBron and Anthony.
I'm asking.
I'm just telling you, he's going to go to L.A.
Does he have a better chance to win a title next year with L.A. or Milwaukee?
I mean,
would you rather hitch your wagon to Giannis or LeBron in year 21? I'm just asking.
He's always wanted to play for the Lakers, Mike. He was supposed to play for the Lakers, and then David Stern vetoed the trade.
Back to the Clippers?
No.
He could still be in L.A.?
No. No. That's
Clippers need a point guard.
No. Russell Westbrook's available. Clippers.
No.
There's no way, Mike. I'm telling you, he's going to the Lakers. If he does, there's one of two places he's going to be. The Lakers, or he's going to stay with the Suns. That's it. I do not accept any answers or anything else but the truth, because nothing else is going
to
happen.
I think he could go to Milwaukee or the Clippers. I wouldn't rule out Milwaukee or the Clippers.
I would rule the Clippers out. There's too much bad. That would be too much bad blood. I think there's. I mean, he gets booed there, Mike. He got booed there last year. There's no way he's going back there.
Hey, it's the same building, man. You know, just flip your allegiances. Go with Billy Crystal instead of Jack Nicholson.
No, he's going with the Joker. Okay, he's going with the Joker.
All right.
Not the Jokic Joker.
That's fine.
Nicholson Joker.
Not the Jokic Joker. The original Jack Nicholson Joker. I got you. I see how it is. I see how it is. Frank Vogel, you like the hiring?
I mean,
it's fine, right? I mean, Vogel's won a championship.
Listen, that hiring to me,
it's fine.
It's all right. The Monty Williams, the Pistons, though, we didn't talk about that at all, Mike. That one was way out of left field, right? Like,
well, I think what's interesting, and again, I'm only going by what I've read and heard, it sounds like Monty Williams turned him down, and they just kept coming back to him with a bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger contract until he eventually said yes, because, hey, they're going to pay me $12 million a year to coach the Detroit Pistons. Sure, I guess I'll go live in Detroit and coach the Pistons for $12 million a year, which is, I don't know, significantly more than I think any other NBA coach is making at this point. So Monty Williams is a good coach, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy who's won in the league. He's a guy who's well-respected. He's a guy who, when you think about what he's done and how he changed the culture in Phoenix and kind of turned that thing around, built around Devin Booker, if Cade Cunningham's healthy, maybe he's that same type of player eventually that Booker became. And so you look at it and you say, Monty Williams is good with young teams. Maybe he's not the guy to get a team over the top. Although, again, don't forget Phoenix had a 2-0 lead in that series in the NBA Finals a couple of years ago against Milwaukee. So as far as just hiring Monty Williams as a coach, I don't think you can criticize Detroit for the end result, but the process of paying Monty Williams $12 million a year and really pursuing a guy with a financial incentive who originally said, I don't want this job. If all of that is accurate and the reporting on that is accurate, then that seems like a strange way to get to hiring Monty Williams as the coach. But, you know, hey, you ended up with a guy that is a proven commodity as an NBA coach. You kind of know what you're getting with him. So even though the process was goofy, I'm not sure that the end result isn't going to be a positive one for the Pistons, if that makes any sense.
Yep, makes sense. I understand. All right. Anything else, Mike?
No, I don't think there's really anything else to hit on, because it's been a really slow time. Other than the coaching hires, there really hasn't been a whole lot going on. Obviously, we've got the draft coming up once the finals are over. I honestly think there's only two more games left in our season. So what, we play Friday and then Monday. They don't play until Monday, right? To take the whole weekend off, which is kind of weird.
No, it's their travel days. It's 3 days night. Between games. This is why.
I know,
why
it's still weird. I'm just saying.
The whole stupidity of 3 games between the first 2 games. They would have had 2. Okay. But here's what they want.
You should have 3 days. You should have the 3 day break.
Here's what they want, Mike.
When
they
want
game 7
days.
On Sunday. Okay. So what happens is they got game 5 on Monday. Then they'll have game 6 on Thursday. And then game 7 will be the following Sunday. So like, if it was to.
Yeah. Well, there is not going to be a game 7. So I don't think we have to worry about that.
Okay. I agree. I don't think there's going to be a game 7. I think there's going to be a game 6, though.
We shall see. We shall see. We shall see. I think we're going to wrap it up on Monday night in Denver, is my guess. All right. Let's leave it there. Thank you for checking out this Game 3 recap of the NBA Finals. I know we didn't record on our normal Tuesday night / Wednesday morning, so we're a day behind, but we just figured it would make a lot more sense to record tonight after Game 3.
And we'll hopefully be back Friday.
And then Game four, you are possibly in, possibly out for game 4.
No, I'll be good Friday night.
Oh, you're good for game 4.
I'll be good for game 5. It's after game 5 in Dangerland.
All right. So hopefully it'll all wrap up and we'll be in the clear, and then you can take off and we'll be good.
Yeah, or you're going to have to get a little Meredith cleansing on the podcast.
Another Han Solo podcast. Meredith cleansing. I'll have to get Meredith to come on and talk. Well, I guess if we're in game 6 or game 7, she'll be at least still mildly interested.
Yeah.
So she was like a Heat. She was a true Heat fan tonight, because she ducked down and went to bed with 2.5 minutes left.
She lasted longer than most of the fans in the stands.
She stormed off. She said, "This game's over." So
there you go.
Anyway. All right, let's leave it there. Thanks for checking us out tonight. We appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.